any case, if I could accomplish that, spend a single day at the Spike, my final test would be behind me, and I would no longer be compelled to visit the Carrion Plateau. Unless, of course, it was my desire to do so.
You must have thought it a simple task,
Vader said. Initially, indeed, Tarkin said. Until Jova allowed me to observe the hill and the spire through macro binoculars.
Your eyes were opened.
Jova said that I could take as much time as I needed to assess the situation and decide on a course of action, and I spent the better part of my sixth season on the plateau doing just that. The first order of business was to get to know my enemy, which I did over the course of the first couple of weeks. I would conceal myself in areas of forest or in the tall savanna grass and observe the routines of the Viamox, which rarely varied from day to day. Or perhaps it's better to say night to night, since that was when they would emerge from their hill caves and set out on communal hunts. The feasting that resulted from their hunts would continue for most of the night, sometimes at the site of their kills, or sometimes back at the caves, where the females fed their gray-skinned young. With the return of the light and the heat, the males would ascend to the top of the hill and sprawl on the rocks at the foot of the spike, which I was never able to get a good look at, even through the macro binoculars, as the hill was the tallest feature for kilometers around in every direction. Mid-afternoon, the Viamox would make their descent, gathering at a watering hole to drink before repeating the entire routine. The waterhole became my preferred place for observing them, and it was there where I began to get to know some members of the troop individually. Their dominant member was a dark-striped male, large and battle-scarred, to whom I gave the name Lord. During my weeks of stealthy observation, I saw him challenged at regular intervals. Sometimes the fights would be to the death, but more often Lord would allow challengers to limp away in shame, but remain part of the troop. Since it was impossible to defeat him, there was much competition among his subordinates to get close to him. In some sense, the fights were as much about training as they were displays of supremacy. Lord was teaching the weaker males, aware that he would eventually have to yield his position for the sake of the troop. The rest understood this, and as a result, followed his lead in all matters. I don't think the species is capable of abstract thought, much less truly sentient, but they do communicate with one another through a complex language of displays and vocalizations. There was a second male that caught my attention, a younger and smaller Viamox, who always seemed to be in Lord's shadow, so that was how I began to think of him. Shadow would tag behind and watch Lord from a respectful distance. Sometimes Lord wouldn't abide the scrutiny and would run Shadow off. At other times he tolerated the younger Viamox's attempts to learn from him. What interested me most, however, was that Shadow had a following of his own, a subgroup of some 8 young males who accompanied him wherever he went. Lord tolerated them as well, so long as they kept their distance, which they always did, retreating if he so much as turned in their direction. It was at the waterhole that Shadow and his group began to take an interest in me. They observed me observing them, and began to study me as something curious that had showed up at the edge of their carefully defined domain. Sated from the previous night's hunt, and having dismissed me as a threat, they demonstrated no immediate interest in killing me. At that point in my life, I had never heard of a Viamox being domesticated, but I had heard of people who used the creatures as watch beasts, and I imagined that it was possible to enter into some sort of partnership with them. I thought that perhaps I could make use of them as allies of a sort, either when I was at the spike or in making my escape. And so each day I would try to edge closer to them, only to have them challenge me on every occasion, forcing me back across the invisible line of their hunting grounds. When I determined I had seen enough, I set myself to the task of thinking through the separate challenges I faced. Getting to the top of the hill, climbing the spike, and getting away, assuming I even survived the ordeal. Neither Jova nor any of the others offered help. Getting to the hill was going to require nothing more than moving while the Veermachts were in the caves. I would emerge from the copse of forest closest to the hill, cross an expanse of savanna, and pick my way through the boulders to the top. There would be no shade and no rest, and some of the crevasses between the boulders appeared deep enough to swallow me whole. If I wasn't safely at the top by the time the Veermachts emerged from the caves, I'd likely be torn apart on the hill. The spike itself presented problems of a different sort. The edges of the black glass column appeared sharp enough to cut through cloth or hide or human flesh. So I devised a strap made from a geranium-threaded belt I found among replacement parts for the old speeder we used from time to time, and from that same belt I also fashioned thick soles for my boots and protective pads for my hands. I knew that even the Veermachts' muscular legs weren't powerful enough to propel them to the top of the spike, but there was still the matter of my remaining on the flat summit for the entire day. Especially after Jova allowed that the Veermachts might delay their nocturnal hunt until they had dealt with me. The vibro-lance was meant to counter that eventuality, though the lance wouldn't contain enough charges to kill or stun all of the males. Worse still, they weren't frightened of the vibro-lance. In run-ins we'd had with solitary Veermachts, they had evinced no fear even of blasters, and had often proved agile enough to dodge beams. Add to this